Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things Aeswath, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at A Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned Unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manissimo Art. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which will cover House of the Dragon Season 3, Episode 1, titled Salt and Sea, Fire and Blood.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood, which is, of course, the source material for House of the Dragon. We'll start with an episode summary, then cover what we think are the main hot takes from the episode, and conclude with an episode-specific favorites roundup.
We will also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
For a good part of this season three premiere, the story jumps around quite a bit. So rather than us doing the same, we're going to focus on what happens with each character or group of characters leading up to the big, very big episode finale. This means we're starting with Rhaena and Sheepstealer, who, when we last saw them in season two, had just caught sight of each other. But Rhaena does, in fact, work up the courage to approach this big old ugly boy and even climb right up onto his back. Unfortunately, he mostly just takes Rhaena for rides of his own choosing, though, hey, at least he does feed her some charred leg of mutton and get her back to Dragonstone, sort of. Things also aren't going so well on the road with Baby Gon. That's Babygone now, folks. And Laerys Littlefooter with Baby Gon whining about what a loser he is, correct. And them very quickly getting stopped by Rhaenyra's forces. The only reason they don't wind up dead is because Laerys reveals their identities and convinces the soldiers that it's better for them to be delivered to Rhaenyra alive. Guess we'll eventually see how that pans out or doesn't. In King's Landing, Alicent returns from her parley with Rhaenyra to find out that Baby Gon has left the building and that Aemond means to stick around to rule in his place rather than go to Harrenhal with Vhagar as originally planned, and as Rhaenyra was expecting. Thankfully, Alicent has some tricks up her sleeve and seems to pretty much manipulate Aemond into going back to the original Harrenhal plan. However, she doesn't convince him fast enough for Dragonseeds Ulf, Hugh, and Adam, who have been chilling at the God's Eye waiting to ambush Aemond and Vhagar. Ulf is especially creeped out by their location, and when Alys Rivers shows up to tell them they're missing a battle at Dragonstone, it seems that she might have convinced them, or at least some of them, to abandon their post, which surely doesn't bode well for Daemon and the forces at Harrenhal, though they're quite busy enough with their current situation anyway, having fought one hell of a battle that their enemy's commander, Jason Lannister, at first appears to have escaped. Lucky for them, the Winter Wolves have arrived just in time, and they brought a gift. Jason Lannister's head, deposited at Daemon's feet, along with the promise that these northern graveyards are here to die for the Dragon Queen.
Speaking of our queen, we sadly don't see much of her in this episode. She's there to express her excitement over her deal with Alicent and plans to take King's Landing. But first, she decides to take action against the Triarchy fleet that has arrived in Gullet, only before she can, her son, Jace, of all people, orders Rhaenyra to be locked in her chambers, presumably to protect her. But the line between protecting and controlling can be very thin, am I right? While Rhaenyra rages about this forced lack of agency, there are a couple of dudes on Team Green that seem content to just sit back and do nothing. Or next to it, Sir Cole, House of Slaw, for one, painting away in his tent, and Ormond Hightower hanging out with his forces and just awaiting Aemon's supposed eventual arrival. Whatever. Who cares? Who cares about them right now? Because it's time for the Battle of the Gullet. The Triarchy has arrived, though it seems under somewhat false pretenses. They have their own strategy, one that goes against Tywin Lannister's, because it's less about taking out Rhaenyra's fleet as a whole and more about Admiral Lohar's desire for revenge on Corlys. Sadly, Lohar is able to exact that revenge, and between their skill and Rhaena's inability to control Sheepstealer, not only does Corlys apparently die, but Rhaenyra's fleet is decimated as well. And that's not all, because Varymax is shot from the sky and Jace goes down with his dragon, surviving just long enough to be riddled with arrows from some Triarchy sailors. And so the season premiere ends with Rhaenyra taking some seriously heavy blows, though locked in her chambers as she is. She doesn't know about any of it just yet, so while we wait for her to find out just how bad things went, we'll jump right into hot take number one. Larry's little footer continues to be unsurprising. In a completely unshocking turn of events, he immediately gives up Baby Gone when confronted by Rhaenyra's forces.
To be fair, it was probably like a little shocking that Larys also gave himself up as Baby Gone's closest advisor or closest counselor. Yeah. I gotta say, I'm interested to see how the heck this is going to play out in the show. Like whether they'll, I don't think they're going to be killed by these soldiers, but are they going to make it to Rhaenyra? What is she going to do once she gets hold of them? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I really didn't see that one coming because I figured he would have just given Baby Gone up and just been like, oh, I'm just some commoner. But I guess if the guards are just killing people that they don't know, of course, I probably would have bent the knee pretty quickly too under the circumstances if it was for like a greater purpose. So I'm kind of curious to see where this one goes.
Yeah, I'm not shocked that he got down on his knees and swore, you know, quote unquote, fealty to Rhaenyra. I guess he didn't really feel like he had a choice when Baby Gone was like spitting and like refusing to kneel at first. And then even once he did, they were like, well, we don't believe you, so we're going to kill you both. And then it's like, well, what can I do here? And see the machinations like turning in his in Littlefooter's mind over there. But yeah, he was pretty smooth, convincing, pretty easy to convince these guys to take them alive. Also the Littlefooter just like, they're like, who are these guys? And he's like, nobodies. And they're like, okay, yeah, kill him. And Larys is just sitting there like not caring at all.
Sucks for you. Yeah.
Oh, such a dick. I mean, to be fair, also at least now he's not alone with Baby Gone and his complaining. Maybe I don't
Exactly.
I don't know how well this is going to turn out for them, but again, guess we'll see. Yeah. Maybe we'll see this season. Maybe not. Who knows?
We'll see.
In this show.
Second they started talking about Harrenhal, I was like, don't.
Well, you know they got to go back there at some point, but
it better be quick. It's like a quick in and out, dude. We're not staying until closing this time, you know?
Closing time. All right, hot take number two. Boys will be boys, or should it be sons will be sons? AKA the dichotomy of how Aemond treats/reacts to Alicent versus how Jace treats/reacts to Rhaenyra. Also, not me naming this hot take, boys will be boys, and then immediately, just immediately thinking about how Aemond is looking like he's about 40 at this point. He looks older than his mom by a good bit.
By a good bit.
But he's also Alice. Yeah. But also, Alicent was essentially, like we said in the summary, able to manipulate Aemond into going to Harrenhal as originally planned, even though he thought at first that he should stay in King's Landing in Aegon's stead, you know, now that Baby gotten out of there. But Alicent, you know, honestly, she worked that pretty well. I watched the, like, after the show thing, and the actress who plays Alicent was kind of saying she didn't know if he actually believed everything that she was saying or whatever, but he wanted to hear it so bad that he just did what she was asking, essentially. To me, it looked like I don't even think he was questioning it, honestly. As soon as she said, you should have been king, I think his brain was just like, he would have done anything she asked of him or told him to do. Yeah. Well, not told him. I think if she'd ordered him around, it wouldn't have gone so well still, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. Like I said, she played that fiddle. possibly too well, because what the fuck was up with that kiss? Ew. Ew. And Dean was like, is this a thing that Targaryens do? And I was like, no. They do the brother and sister thing, but mother and son. And also, she's not even a Targaryen, so.
Yeah. Well, maybe that made it okay for him. He's like, well, you're not a Targaryen, so we can totally make out and make babies now or whatever.
Oh, God, no. Now, on the other hand, when Rhaenyra wants to go to the Gullet when the Triarchy ships arrive, Jace straight up has her locked in her room, denies her her own agency, which does not look good for her since she's supposed to be the queen. Little side note, big oof over these new cracks in Rhaenyra's armor. And by armor, I mean her demeanor, her mental health, etc. Her tearing up that jacket with the knife, I mean, just hacking away at it. And that line when she says, I may appear to have the weak and feeble body of a woman, but I possess the heart and spirit or heart and soul of a king. And she's like crying as she says it. Rhaenyra.
It was heartbreaking, man. I truly felt bad for her at this moment. You know, and Jace of all people. I understand what he was trying to do, but he really feeds into that whole monster of like, oh, we can't have a queen. Or it's going to be like a puppet queen, you know, somebody who's not really in control, just like a figurehead. I don't know. Like, I think a true leader is going to ride out to battle with their troops, you know, which is exactly what Rhaenyra was supposed to do, which, as far as I'm concerned, would truly solidify her rule, where she's like, yeah. Oh, I went out there and I fought and I rode my dragon and turned everybody into barbecue ribs and shit like that. Like, mm-hmm. That would have been like, oh, yeah, okay, see, that's the fucking queen. Look at her. Look at the power she has. So for Jace to do this, man, is, I don't know, it just feeds into that whole, like, feeble woman thing. I guess, you know, even family members don't believe in the strength of our queen.
I don't know that it was necessarily 100% that. I do think that in his mind, her going out there and like risking her life, like, yeah, sure, to her, that sounds like a great idea. And in a lot of ways, it probably is. But also, he's not wrong about like what happens if she dies. And she's just like, well, then you'll be king, I guess. And I don't know that he's really even ready for that.
I get it. He probably just wanted to do his part and protect his mom and all that stuff. But so the bad. Optics of it is just... It's just bad. Where I think that Rhaenyra is really losing focus is that she is so caught up in taking the throne and winning this war with the most minimal amount of bloodshed possible. I wouldn't want bloodshed either, man, but she's kind of losing focus because even the fact of like letting, you know, oh, we're going to leave the door open, you can come in as like whatever, dude. It would have been part of my tactical book as like, this could quite possibly be a trap and we need to prepare for it. So that way you don't get caught with your pants down, you know, and the fact that she was willing to just ride in like the way she was doing, that's where I kind of felt like, yeah, you're kind of losing focus a little bit here because you don't know.
Yeah,
that is an unknown. You have to kind of like prepare for that. But I understand where Rhaenyra is coming from. You know, she doesn't want bloodshed. She doesn't want it to be Allison's, you know, taking her side. Like, no, yeah, absolutely. Take the throne, whatever. But I would have been way more cautious than she was in that position.
Yeah, but that's not our queen.
Nope, it's not our queen.
Well, I mean, it is in the fact of not wanting that bloodshed, but not when it comes. I mean, this is how many times now that she's been like, let me take my dragon out. I want to fight. And everybody's like, no, mm-hmm. You shalt not. Thou shalt not pass.
Yeah. And if there's anyone I want to see riding out on their dragon and just burning people and turning people into French toast, it's fucking Rhaenyra. You know, she's the fucking queen. She's the rightful fucking heir. And I want to see her out there doing that. So that part.
Burninating the countryside to exactly. remind them of her love.
Exactly. What says more than love than just a little bit of fire? Let her light the fire of your heart. So that takes us to hot take number 3. All hail the Winter Wolves. Hell which yeah. Daemon thinks he has to hunt down the Golden Lord Lannister, only for the Northern Greybeards showing up and tossing said lord's head at Daemon's feet.
Yeah, I don't know if I personally have a lot to say here other than it's so cool to finally see the Winter Wolves. I love how they just kind of tossed Jason Lannister's head at Daemon's feet with basically no fanfare. And announce like, yep, we're here to die for the Dragon Queen. I cannot wait to see more of them this season. I hope that they fight as like ferociously. I hope we actually get to see them fight. I mean, it would have been neat to see them, I guess, lop off the Lannister head, especially having gone through all of Game of Thrones first and watching the Lannisters just kind of get the one up on the Starks over and over again. And now it's like, ha ha, fuck you.
This is one of those scenes, man, that like made me think of like the whole crab feeder thing. The whole brevity is the soul of wit. You know, they're not wasting my time. It's just, oh yeah, you wanted his head? Here he is. Okay. Yeah we're here. Here's his head. You can let your
and
brain
and the creepy kind of like animal calls and stuff that mm-hmm. were happening. Because at first I thought maybe it was Caraxes. I thought it was mm-hmm. the whiny boy making some noises. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, no, that's coming from the other direction. They're using, you know, hunting calls.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely something the Northerners would do. It was neat. Like after that passing moment where I thought at first it might be whiny boy. And then I was like, oh no, wait, it's the winter wolves making those yes. noises. What smart dudes. That's probably how they got the jump on those Lannisters.
Yeah. When they showed up, I just went into Gordon Ramsay vibe where I was like, finally, some delicious fucking Starks. I like this scene. They just showed up. Very simple. Here.
Yep.
You wanted some head. Here's your head. You know?
You wanted some head. Here's your head.
Here's your head.
It could be taken such the wrong way. Damon probably wouldn't have said none of that either.
No. I mean, like, well, I mean, Northern head is good. So, you know.
Okay, hot take number four, useless. Sir Cole of House Slaw is useless. Just painting away and refusing to do anything about the soldiers being assholes, even when Gawain Hightower confronts him about it. Seriously, here's Sir Cole of House Slaw painting and whining. Whining and painting. And that's whining with an H because, of course, he's not doing the fun kind of W-I-N-I-N-G whining.
No. The writers clearly know who I am. They must be watching this and they just know. They're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to piss Manny off more this season with fucking coleslaw over here. At this point, it's kind of teetering on the scales that I don't even give a fuck who wins this fucking war. I just want to see Cole fucking quartered. This guy is just rising the ranks of the most pathetic, saddest ass clown in all of fucking Westeros. I mean, shit, man. Even Castro executed a guy for fucking ravaging a fucking villager. And he was a piece of shit. And this fucking waste is all like, wounds. Bad things are going to happen. I guess we're all going to be monsters. Fuck you, Cole. Like, I swear, if this motherfucker existed in today's time, he'd be the classic noble incel. Get fucked, Cole.
Yeah, not wrong. Totally not wrong. Absolutely. Oh, noble incel. The most, like...
The worst fucking
kind. Most hypocritical.
His character, not the actor. The actor does it great because I hate him. You know he's a good actor.
Right,
I'm
yeah.
fucking gonna hate him. Love the actor. Fantastic. But the character, dude, I want to fist fight his ass in a fucking dingy alleyway in Miami when it's 100 degrees at fucking 1 a.m. is what I want to do. All right, dude? I want to clean his face with the fucking concrete. Anyways, I don't know who the actor's name is, but hey, good job, man. You know, you're doing really fucking good.
Yeah, doing really good at making us just despise just you.
Up. Yeah, great job, man. All right, hot take number five, the batter of the gullet fake outs. Take one. Do we love them? Do we hate them? And also, well, holy shit, the battle of the gullet and its death tolls.
Yeah, so fake out number one, Corlys making it over the teeth and thinking he's escaped Lohar, and honestly made me think it too. I knew the Battle of the mm-hmm. Gullet was going to happen. I know what happens in the Battle of the Gullet. I've read the things, et cetera, et cetera. But I've heard things from Martin saying that they're doing a lot of things different in the show. So I was like, listen, maybe it's not going to go as badly as I expect it to. It did, though.
It did.
Yeah, the Triarchy, like Lohar and the ship, they make it through too, and they quote-unquote win the day in that. Mm-hmm. Sure, the enemies don't have much left either, but high tide, Corlys' seat is sacked and burning, and most of mm-hmm. Rhaenyra's fleet is now dead in the water. So it's like they did what they came there to do, and, mm-hmm. and Lohar did what they came there to do, because Corlys, I can't imagine that he's lived through that.
So many dead. But I will say this, that whole battle scene and with the ships, man, reminded me just how much I love ship battles. There are times when I felt like the battle went on too long. This is one of those things to where, like, in season two, when you're in a relationship and the person does wrong and you're just like, oh well, whatever, I guess we'll just go have dinner at Harrenhal again. And then they're like, no, look, I got you a big ship, there's lots of battles, there's other dragons, and there's gonna be lots of arrows and swords and stuff. And it's like, yeah, now you're just kind of doing too much now. I get it. You're trying to win me back over, but it was awesome, dude.
It was a lot for the first episode. I was shocked that they did the whole battle and everything in the very first episode. I really did not expect it to happen that soon, but there were some other things about the battle. So two more actually that made it into our hot takes. So hot take number six, Battle of the Gullet Fakeouts, take two. This is the fake out of Reyna showing up on Sheepstealer thinking she's going to help win the day, only for her to actually have zero control pretty much over that dragon. And he just wreaks a bunch of havoc. I mean, he's burning the bad guys, but guess what? Yep. He's burning the good guys too. Sheepstealer has been a lone dragon up in the Vale for a long time. And you can tell by the way he looks, it looks like he's been attacked by other dragons or another dragon, right? Which is also, I'm pretty sure how it went in Fire and Blood, that there were just maybe not, I don't know if it was ever necessarily seen, but stories that he had gotten into fights with other dragons. So he doesn't see these dragons as his friends. He don't know these dragons. They could be the dragons that attacked him before. He don't care. And I think I saw something that might have been in the after the show thing where it was like he's trying to protect his rider as well. And it's like, okay, I get that, but I'm also not really sure that's what that was. I don't think he really gave two stinks about what Reyna wanted, or even necessarily about protecting her, because she might be riding him. He might have fed her a little bit, but she doesn't have any control over him. Very, very obviously doesn't have any control over him.
No.
So I don't know that he was really thinking, oh, I'm protecting her.
He clearly tolerates her is what it is. He's like, you know what? It's a little better than like being alone. But like, seriously, Reyna, like control your dog, man. I felt so bad for her. Out of all the dragons, you got like the most feral dragon. She did her best because I love her character. I felt so bad for her. But in this scene also, it reminded me of everyone's favorite last season of Game of Thrones when Daenerys starts torching all of fucking King's Landing, right? Because I was rooting for her the majority of the time throughout that show. You know, I wanted to see her take the throne and all this kind of stuff. And then she gets there and she gets on her dragon and all of a sudden she just kind of flips and just starts burning everybody. Then it's like, you know, you're kind of cheering like, all right, yeah, wait, whoa. Okay, hold on. Let's back it up a minute.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but at least in that sense, though, Daenerys told Drogon to do that.
No, she did. Yeah, she.
Poor Reyna is up there like, calm, calm, calm. No, Sheepstealer. No, that's my sister. Don't do it. Those aren't our enemies. And he's just like, what the fuck ever, man? Burn, burn, burn.
Exactly. Daenerys was just like, if it moves, roast it. But yeah, poor Reyna. She did her best, though. But I can't wait to see how that unfolds because I really love her character and I want to see her character kind of come to fruition.
Yeah, I feel bad because it's like she finally, after all this time, gets herself a dragon. And then it's like, it does not go well for her.
But it's like, go figure. I would have been her character in that fucking show. I've been like, oh shit, finally I got a dragon. It's like when you're young and you get a car and you're like, oh shit, I finally got a car. And then it breaks down 2 weeks later and you're like, fuck. She's like, yes, I finally got a dragon. Wait a minute, it's killing everybody.
Or you're just constantly getting like speeding tickets and stuff because you think you're hot shit.
That too, yeah.
Moving a little too fast here, Reyna. There need to be like dragon police in Westeros that are just like out there patrolling the skies on their own dragons. Here's a citation for not controlling your beast.
Exactly. You're just flying around torching everybody and it's like boop boop and you're like, oh shit, we gotta make a run for it, Sheepstealer, let's go. They're just doing drive-by torchings, you know, to like random villages and shit. Break yourself, fool.
His name is literally Sheepstealer. Yeah, he's just been doing hit and runs on local farmers that have nothing to do with anything.
Exactly. Here it is. Hot take number seven. Big surprise. Battle of the Gullet Fakeouts. Take three.
This is the saddest, honestly. Yep. Like, it's sad that Corlys is almost certainly dead. It's sad that Reyna couldn't control her dragon the way she wanted, expected, and it caused her and everybody else a whole bunch of trouble. But most sad is, first of all, like, the fake out originally was Vermax being shot with the weighted spear and almost being dragged down. Yep. But then he's rescued by Bela and Moondancer. So you're like, okay, well, that's not going to happen again, right? Because they were rescued. They cut him loose from the weighted thing. He's fine now. But then, nope, same exact thing happens later, minus the rescue. And then it was sad with that dragon just like struggling to like, oh god, that was honestly, like, I know it's a dragon and everything and not a real animal, but that is heart-wrenching.
It is.
And then Jace unclips himself and is able to swim to the surface and immediately just arrows and arrows, and he's immediately dead too.
And they did it great because it was no fanfare. You didn't see some guy, you know, pulling back on his bow to like take. It was just all of a sudden, just poop, no fanfare in this kid's death. But he kind of deserved it because he shouldn't have been out there to begin with. But I guess that's what you do when you lock your mom in the room and then go do whatever you want to fucking do. I understood what he was doing, but he was not prepared for that fucking battle in any kind of way. And I think that kind of shows when it comes to these Targaryens. They think that since they have the dragons, that they're almost kind of invincible. They can just, we're just going to go out there and torch everything. And it's like, well, yeah, you can, but it just takes one clean shot to take you out, dude, you know, or one good spear to pull your dragon into the fucking water. And I think that's a classic example of just inexperienced combat. You're not prepared for things like that. After that dragon took the first few shots, I mean, I thought the dragon was going down the first time around, but got out of it, saved by Moondancer. Okay, awesome. And then when he had fucking gotten hit again, I was like, oh shit, okay, I guess we're going full measure on this one. We're gonna put this fucking dragon in the bottom of the fucking ocean, which is exactly what happened. But I do feel bad for fucking Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra's down two kids now.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to her finding that out.
No,
presumably next week.
and really at the hands of the dragons also, when you really think about it. You guys treasure these things so much. They're just walking death is what it is.
Just a side note, in Game of Thrones, they bring out those basically like giant crossbow things, right? So same thing, but they don't have like a weighted thing on the end of them, but they're able to take down one of the dragons, Rhaegal, I think it was, with that. But they acted like nobody in the history of anything has ever done this to a dragon. And now it's like, well, I'm pretty sure like they even said that. They're like, look at this brand new thing we've created. It'll take down dragons. And it's like, oh, but this, apparently this had happened before. Nobody talked about it.
No one told him on this. And just the fact that, one of the Ice Walkers killed the dragon with a fucking spear. They're not as invincible as you think they are. In the end, they're just animals.
Very big and dangerous animals.
Very big and dangerous animals, but they definitely put them in that godlike state.
Yeah.
But again, if your power, you know, resides in something that is external, then you have no power at all.
Okay, well, I think it is time for our favorites roundup. First, I do have to admit that I did get some chills hearing the theme song again and knowing that it's opening a brand new episode, right?
Yes.
We didn't have a theme song with Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which I think they made a good choice with that. So I also think that because it had been 2 years since we got a brand new episode with a theme song attached, it was like, oh, okay, I feel it. Because it started, and I was like, oh yeah, the theme. And then 20 seconds in, I had the chills. When I rewatch it, for sure, like I don't get those chills because it's like, okay, like I'm rewatching something I've already seen, but knowing like this is the head of a new episode, yeah, got him a little bit.
It definitely felt like home. You heard it and you're like, here I am. Awesome. And I love their opening, you know. I like their opening so much better than the original Game of Thrones. I was always a big fan of the original Game of Thrones opening. I really liked it. But with this one's, with Tapestry and telling the story, I was watching and I was like, damn, this is fucking good, dude.
Yeah. I didn't really pay too much attention to what was going on to the Tapestry this time, which I probably should have, but I literally was thinking, I'll pay more attention to, I was so tired when I watched this last night. And I'm also having eye problems again in my other eye this time. So I was like also stressed about that. So I wasn't paying the most attention to it, but I know in future weeks I'm going to want to, because I want to see what they add to it for the end of the theme song that happened in the previous episode for sure. Another thing I really liked, Sheep Stealer feeding Rhaena.
That was awesome.
It was kind of funny how he like blew the sheep out of his mouth like a bird feeding their baby.
That's what I thought, because when he landed and he was like, huh, and I'm like, wait, are you going to feed her, dude? And he's blah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
But then he even cooked it for her, charred like a mutton. Yeah.
Oh man.
I do wonder how well cooked that actually was. And I don't think sheep is an animal that you want to be eating if it's not cooked thoroughly, because parasites and stuff.
I think out of everything happening in Westeros, that's
probably the least of Rhaena's problems anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. She might have some worms now, but also the dragon seeds, Ulf, his thoughts on the nonsense of only being named a knight, they were pretty hilarious. He doesn't need a horse, he has a fucking dragon. He doesn't need a knighthood for men to respect him. He has a fucking dragon. He can't live in a title or drink it. I liked that a lot.
It was good.
He was a little bit annoying and extra, but also I didn't mind him being that way. Because I mean, he was that way last season too. And when he got the dragon, And I was kind of like, oh, so what are they going to do here? How much are we going to see of him and his kind of just general attitude? Adam is very much just like, stay the course, do the thing we were told to do. And the other guy seems to just kind of be in the middle. It looked like for sure the other guy, Hugh, was going to leave with Ulf. I'm curious to see how they play the dragon seeds thing versus how it goes in the book. That's all I'm going to say. Also, just LOL at Lohar being such an ass. Like, the contract made with the Lannisters or with the Greens, I guess, via the Lannisters means absolutely nothing because revenge.
Revenge, yep.
And Lohar just shoving Tywin Lannister and all of his armored, aka heavy men, overboard so they can make it over the teeth. What a just not, like, inconsequential death for the both Lannisters in this episode. One of them dies off screen and its head is delivered to Daemon. And the other one just gets shoved, like, oh, how much does that armor weigh? Bam. Bye. Bam. Forever.
Bye. It was not a good era for the Lannisters, apparently. Just throwing them away like trash.
That's not the worst to see that. I will give 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows to the just silly reduction of the Lannisters in this episode.
Yeah. Honestly, just with that itself, with you saying that, I would give 10 out of 10 with the whole battle and the lead up to it with Corlys and everything like that. And Lohar the Admiral. That was fantastic. These were just two evenly matched sailors is what it was. Going toe to toe. It was just beautifully done. One is suspected dead. The other one is taking a really deep breath from their larynx at this point. I thought that was really good, man. I thought that was a very nice, evenly matched things because it's so easy in Game of Thrones for it not to be like that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have dragons, it's like, well, we're just going to fucking decimate. And that's cool for certain scenes. But this was just that whole battle, man. I would just see it as like a war of attrition. It was literally just both sides chipping away at each other until they got to their conclusion. And that fucking fantastic, man. Fantastic.
I went into it being like, I don't care what's happening on these ships. I don't care about a sea battle because I didn't realize that they were going to do the whole Battle of the Gullet in this episode. And then by the end, I was like, whoa, okay, then this isn't what I signed up for, but now I'm here for it. The dragons, I mean, really, they made almost no difference. And some of that obviously was Sheepstealer showing up and just wrecking everything, keeping Moondancer and even to a point Baramax busy. And also, I don't know how I feel about Sheepstealer's look. I knew he was going to be like a little bit janky, right? But he looks like if my dog Ellie had an underbite, that's what this is. Yeah. That's what this dragon looks like. Well, I love my dog so much, but she's a funny looking little dog. And this dragon is a funny looking gigantic fucking dragon.
Well, that's what I loved about Sheepstealer, right? Because my cat is kind of inherently the ugliest cat of all the cats that I have. It's not like, let's just say, conventionally pretty. And she is a little bitch. She loves me, but she's a little bitch, you know? So that relationship with Sheepstealer and Reyna, I was like, oh, this is a relationship between me and my cat. Sometimes the heart weighs out a little more than ugly underbite.
Yeah, I just wish Sheepstealer's heart was a little more, I don't know, controllable by Reyna or something. And he was,
you know, there's always going to be a part of me that loves the chaos, dude. I like order. I like all that stuff. But sometimes when you get chaos, it's just like, all right, baby, just do what you're going to do. Burn whatever the fuck you're going to burn. I'm just going to hold on to your little back thorns over here and try not to fall off.
Honestly, 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows to Reyna for her just upper body strength, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
all these other dragon riders have saddles and shit, but she's just straight up holding on to his little spikes.
No, she's completely raw dogging that thing. And it's like crazy. I can't even imagine what that feels like on your thighs and your butt. Oh my God. That's got to be so sore.
I mean, riding a horse bareback isn't really all that comfortable, I can tell you. So riding a dragon bareback with the scales and the spikes, and also just the no reins or anything to hold, like nothing to hold on to, saddle horn, whatever all the rest of them hold on to. I think it's different for every person, but nothing.
Sheepstealer's like, look, just hold on or don't, whatever.
It's he don't care.
I don't care. We're going for a dive right now. Do your best.
If Caraxes is the whiny boy, I think Sheet Stealer is the Chaos Dragon.
Chaos Dragon, dude. That's why I liked it, because I was like, okay, now you're talking my language.
Any other favorite things for you?
No, man. For me, it really was the ship battle, because I felt like it was a nice arc that kind of was contained within one episode. You know, yeah. Like, yes, we don't know the fate of some people, but the whole battle was just done very great. And I thought they did a great job in introducing like these kind of B stories, Reyna and stuff like that with her dragon, and then Jace and stuff like that. Even though there was a lot going on and a lot of different angles to like view it from with the different characters, I felt like they did a really good fucking job on just keeping it super tight. And I didn't feel like that at first when I first started watching the episode, but after I thought about it, I was like, no, you know what? This was actually really fucking good. 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for an opener, not for the entire show, but just for an opener. I'd give it 10 out of 10. For an episode in the entire series, I'd probably give it a good 8 out of 10. But again, you know, it's going to get more points because only Harrenhal was mentioned and not seen, really. So
it was seen like in the background, literally. Yeah, we didn't enter Harrenhal. We did not enter Luigi's dungeon in this episode.
Exactly. No Luigi's mansion this time. I mean, if Eamon if Eamon wants to go and he can just disappear, like just go there and then we'll see you next season, baby. Just go do your thing. You're going to see witches, you're going to see ghosts or whatever, and you're going to figure it out just like Daemon did.
The little bit we had of Alice Rivers was kind of, wait, where'd you come from? Yeah. You're back now? What havoc are you?
What are you up to now?
If Sheepstealer is the Chaos Dragon, she's the Chaos Witch. And I don't trust her, but also.
Yeah. Also, hats off to me for the most poor explanation I can possibly give on the family lineage, because Jen decided to sit next to me to watch it. And she doesn't know anything about Game of Thrones. And we're in season 3 House of the Dragon. And I was like, okay. Hold on a second. Hold up. Rhaenyra, okay, is the fucking daughter of Viserys, our fucking king. Let me tell you what a great person he is. You know? And I had to go down through that entire thing. And I was like, I don't even think I explained this right.
Well, yeah, because it's like Rhaenyra is the daughter. And then his first wife died before having any other children who actually lived. And then he married Allison and had a bunch of chillins with her. Also, we didn't talk about Orban Hightower. He's not like, isn't a favorites roundup thing or anything, but he is certainly a character.
Oh, yeah.
With lips. This episode, I think I would give it like a 7.5 or an 8 out of 10 Targ eyebrows. I'm with you on that. I think that the first like half of it, I was like, oh God, this is jumping around so much. Like, do we really need these like minute long or 2 minute long? Like some of them, yes, we need. Like, obviously it's great to see Daemon at the end of that battle and the Winter Wolves showing up. But like, did we really need the stuff with Baby Gon just yet? I don't know. I think that that could have been saved for like the next episode, honestly. I want to trust that something's going to happen in the future with that storyline that, okay, it needed to be in the first episode, because like really it didn't. I don't think like all we really needed probably was Eamon finding out that Baby Gon is... Baby gone,
and he's gone.
The kiss with Allison, also weird.
That was weird.
I just didn't like it.
Do what the Targaryens do. Because the way I rated this episode was simple. It's like, number one, there wasn't a horrific cesarean happening in this episode, which that was good. And there wasn't a big nothing burger that happened. So I was like, okay, shit. Ships, dragons, fire. All right. You got me on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, overall good. And like I said a little bit ago, I also was kind of like, I don't care from ships. Why are we listening to this like father-son chat on the ship? Like, where is this going to go? But I think they wrapped that all up together really nicely toward the end, where Alan was even father when Corlys, I think he saw Corlys fall overboard. Man, I watched the episode in full twice, and then I kind of like skipped through and rewatched some scenes a third time. But I still, like, I know I still missed things.
Yeah, no, they did good with it. I just liked it because it just felt like a self-contained kind of movie almost.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that. So I'm kind of curious to see, because I just like the fact, because with all the battle that was going on, I was doing that guy where I was like, okay, great, here we go. It's going to be 4 episodes of this ship battle scene is what it's going to be, instead of actually moving the story forward. But the fact that they kind of kept it self-contained and kind of pretty much wrapped it up towards the end of it, I was like, okay, cool. I felt like the episode was just more weighted in like the content that it gave. us.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, and honestly, again, like for a season premiere, I mean, honestly, this might, of all the three seasons, this might have been, because it was just so action packed for basically the whole second half, that really over it, not that I am against the talky scenes or anything. Obviously, we're not against that because we've loved them in this show more often than not. Minus Luigi's Mansion, Harrenhal.
Minus Luigi's Mansion.
Dragging out too long. But really, we've never been anti, like, the talkie scenes or all about, like, oh, it has to be action, action, action all the time. I mean, and we how much could you even be a fan of Game of Thrones if you hated all the
slow burn? You know, you got to love the slow burn. And I thought they did great with that in season one. Season two, they just kind of, like, that fire fizzled out towards the end there.
Yeah, so I guess at this point, I'm not expecting, I think the next episode... Oh, we didn't even think. What about Maester Manny's predictions? We didn't even think about those.
We didn't even think about that.
I forgot that we added them kind of toward the end of, or partway through, I think, last season. We started doing Maester Manny's predictions. And yeah. I don't think I looked back at enough of our documents. So, like, what about Maester Manny's predictions? Does Maester Manny have any predictions?
Yeah. So, my predictions for next season is, or this next episode is going to be a lot slower than the first one. And I don't believe that Corlys is dead. I believe he's going to come back.
Really? All right.
That's what I think. There was actually only one prediction that really came true throughout my entire life, and it was before we did this podcast, years before. And I was at work one time, and somebody was like, you know, the last season of Game of Thrones was happening. And he was like, who do you think is going to sit on the throne? And I was like, no one's going to sit on the throne. I said, I'm willing to bet one of them dragons is going to set it on fire and it's going to fucking melt. Watch. Ain't no. I said, it's already built up too much. Damn, I was right.
I think for season two of House of Dragon, you had some, I mean, they were minor predictions, but you had some predictions that came to some sort of fruition, even if it was like only partially. So
I'm like a good psychic, right? If you just throw enough out there, something's bound to stick. Something's going to stick.
I mean, I agree with you though. I think next episode is going to be, I don't want to say slower, but I think it's going to be more of like,
I mean, it kind of has to be because it has to go with through the aftermath of this.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool with me. I'm like, oh, yep, okay, that's great. We can kind of recenter and like, there's a lot of things that need to get dealt with.
I mean, if it's a giant battle every single episode, it's kind of hard to keep up with, honestly. Like, how shall we count the deaths?
Exactly. I'm really predicting that the rest of the season is just going to be slower until the last episode, and it's going to build up to whatever the last season that we'll get in 2028 or 2029 or whatever, God willing, that there's still a world at that point. But
I do think that we are set for at least one, if not two more big battles this season. I was shocked that the Battle of the Gullet happened so soon, which is what has me thinking like, oh, we're going to get some slow stuff. And not against that, as long as it's done right, as long as it's not just Daemon dreaming around Luigi's mansion.
I swear to God, if Daemon shows up there and they start feeling, I'm just going to be like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm out. Like, forget it. I'm going to do four episodes.
No, not allowed. We've seen this through so far. We have to see it through to the end. It's like,
I will. I just won't be happy about it.
Trust me. I've been there. How long have I been doing the bitching dead?
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all have been done with covering The Walking Dead episode by episode for many years now. I don't think this will get to that extent.
I don't think so, because at least there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's only one season after this, and that's fine with me, right, dude? Because as far as I'm concerned, dude, four is the magic number for shows. Four seasons, quick and easy, and tell us solid fucking story. So I'm hoping that with the way this episode turned out is very promising. I'm like, okay, you guys are getting to the meat of this shit, and I really hope that's how we proceed forward.
Yeah. I mean, I do think we're gonna get Rhaenyra and King's Landing this season. That is inevitable. So,
well, good. At least I got something to look forward to for our queen to take the fucking goddamn throne, because it's hers.
Ah, yes, our queen. All right. Well, as we close out the episode, we just want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us for Hot D Takes. Manny and I will be back next week to cover season 3, episode 2. For the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow at Geek Saga on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and or YouTube. And also, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. if you're listening to this only as a podcast, waiting for it to go public, keep in mind that right now our $5 and up a month patrons get access to our live streams of these episodes, which will be happening at 7 p.m. on Mondays throughout the season. I am seriously dealing with some eye issues right now. So barring another major like eye emergency, 7 p.m. on Mondays throughout the season, $5 and up patrons get access to the live streams. And then the unedited video will be available to our $3 and up patrons the day after that. So Tuesday evening. And the podcast usually won't come out till like at least Thursday afternoon, just due to the fact that Manny and I have real life jobs that pay bills.
Yep. One day,
The more patrons we get, like maybe someday I can just spend my time editing podcasts.
Exactly.
During the week. Or you can do it, you know, whatever. You can pay your salary.
A lot more podcasts, you know, if you want a podcast every day.
For sure.